The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
It's Empty Wheel Friday on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Well, it is. On Fridays, we get together with Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net and try to make sense out of what happened in the week leading up to this point. And it doesn't get easier, that's for sure. This has been a surreal week, as if the others weren't. Hey, Marcy, how are things in Ireland?
I put up earlier in the week, I put up a post to on social media to a study showing that recent right wing mob violence was significantly advertised by Alex Jones. Like, there's a lot of debates right now about do we have the right balance in the United States on foreign disinformation and yada yada. And here in Ireland, there are these fascists that are being drummed up by especially Steve Bannon and Alex Jones. So that's how things are in Ireland, is that and it's crazy because the Brits have kind of thrown off their migrants onto Ireland, right? Because there's no border between the North and the Republic. And so the Brits, like people who otherwise are going to be sent to Rwanda in the Tories' ridiculous, send them to Rwanda, like the Tories get stupider and stupider. So the people who otherwise would be sent to Rwanda are coming through Northern Ireland into the Republic. And the Republic is generally fairly welcoming to migrants because, you know, we're a diaspora nation. And so they did this poll about the border, which Irish people love having no border, right? Because you can wander back and forth between the North and the Republic very easily. And even Sinn Féin, which of course wants a united Ireland, said, well, we have to police the border. I'm like, you can't police the border. Like, it's not going to be policeable. Right. So that's how crazy things are getting in Ireland. But that's where we are. Welcome to 2024 around the world.
Yes. And I got to say, it's Bruce Springsteen week in Ireland. He's doing like a bunch of shows there this week. I'm surprised, like, it's not top of mind.
No, nope. I'm just sitting here. I'm going to a rugby match tomorrow, though.
Are you? I'm a big Springsteen fan. So I'm seeing he's doing Belfast and just like four or five shows over the course of this week. So just saying. Great tour, by the way. And I've seen him dozens of times over there. Oh, yes. I've seen this tour twice.
People are more excited because Taylor Swift made it to Europe.
Oh.
I think she's doing a Dublin show, but not for a while. And I couldn't get those tickets anyway. So
yeah. See, I'm not a Swiftie. I'm a Springsteen.
I'm not a Swiftie, but it would be sort of a kick to see one of her shows.
Sure. I actually saw her once when my daughter, who just turned 25, was about 12. And she really wanted to see Taylor Swift. And we
that's
did.
That's got to be the perfect way to watch.
And it was really good. I saw her through my daughter's eyes, who at the time was a fan. Not anymore. She's too cool for that. And I dragged her with me to a Springsteen show, you know, back in 2016, the River Tour. So she's grown up with Springsteen music. But next week we're going to tape early because I am heading up to Prescott, Arizona, up in the mountains where it'll be cooler because we're supposed to have our first real 100-degree day next Saturday, but I'll be up in Prescott to see Michael Franti and Spearhead. If you ever need a shot of positivity, it's Michael Franti.
It's like, just that part of Arizona is so lovely.
I know. I'm excited. I'm really excited for that.
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of the world is that part of North
really?
Arizona.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I have not been there yet. So the furthest north I've been so far since we moved here is Sedona, which is gorgeous.
Right. Right.
So.
Right. You know that my marriage, my wedding celebration we had in Sedona. So, everyone who came from Europe got to go to the Grand Canyon, even if they only came for the weekend. So it was really awesome.
That's very cool. Awesome.
And a lot of people, like half the people who came from Ireland, rented convertibles. They love that too.
Well, of course, that's what you do. It's the land of sunshine, right? Something like that. Anyway, so I'm delaying the inevitable. This was the week we finally saw. We'll get through the Stormy Daniels stuff first and then move on. But Stormy Daniels took the stand in the Donald Trump fraud election interference case. on Monday.
And she rocked it. She absolutely rocked it.
Right. Now, on Thursday, on direct examination, I guess the judge was getting frustrated that she was going into too much detail. But when we saw the transcripts, we saw a sidebar where the judge went a bit nuts on Donald Trump's attorneys because he was shaking his head visibly and cursing audibly as she was testifying, which you don't do in court, apparently.
Right. And it all comes back to his attorneys on their opening arguments said that they didn't fuck. And so Donald Trump was like trying to say, oh, no, we didn't fuck. And Stormy was up there going black and white tiles on the floor. And I nosed through his dob kit and he had Perk shampoo and
Old
I didn't
Spice
understand that.
And Old Spice.
And it was clear that, you know, she was very clear that she was not physically coerced by him. But she described that it was very awkward because she knew that Keith Schiller was outside the door, that, you know, she went in to use the restroom, came out, and Trump is on the bed in his boxers. And she was, you know, as she described, like, I've never had somebody twice.
She was twice my age.
At one point, they're like, did you something or other about this indictment? She's like, which indictment? There are so many. And Trump's team tried to get that thrown out. And it's like, no, you asked her. Like, don't, you know, they keep asking questions they don't know the answer to. So no, Stormy was great. Stormy was like, she was, it's from the sounds of things. I mean, obviously I'm not there. It sounds like she was very, very nervous in the first day,
right.
But the second day, Trump's female attorney, Susan Nicholas was really trying to throw her for a loop. And Stormy was like, no, you're trying to get me to say something that's not, you're trying to trick me into saying something that's not true.
Right. No, she found her footing. By the way, it's pronounced Nicholas. Go figure. Nicholas. I struggled with that too. And then I finally heard them call it Nicholas. Who is Nicholas? And it's just spelled weird. So she found her footing on the second day and was taking no shit from anyone. She really did better. And apparently Nicholas, the Trump's attorney, went off and spent like 2 hours on whether they ate dinner or not. And then they tried to call for another mistrial because she gave out too much detail. It's like, no. Moving right along. And now Monday, Michael Cohen takes the stand. So, and they're saying he could be on the stand for the better part of the week.
Yeah, it sounds like he's their second to last witness. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously Trump is going to try and slam him. Trump is going to spend days trying to slam him. But you know, prosecutors have set it up. Like, one of the last things they did today is they showed the phone records, including the call that Cohen recorded, right? Cohen recorded Trump agreeing to this call, and prosecutors have been prepping this claim that Cohen tampered with it, or that there's a different version of the call that the FBI got. And one of the last things they did today is show that at the moment it cut off, Cohen got a new incoming call. So they now have an explanation for why the recording of the call got cut off part way. So that answers one of the ways they were going to try and rebut this.
Well, you know, this trial, it's surreal. It's all surreal. And the fact is that there are people out there who have no clue that it's going on because it's not televised, and we could argue either side of that. But now it's looking more and more like this might be the only one of the prosecutions that goes to trial before the election. Because this week, well, you wrote it up in a post at emptywheel.net, how we got to a place where right-wingers cheer stealing nuclear documents. We learned that Judge Eileen Cannon is doing Trump's bidding, as we knew she would. And she's indefinitely postponed any Trump's trial date in Florida.
And she's entertaining motions that are ridiculous. She's entertaining, you know, like there is no selective prosecution claim against Donald Trump, but she's entertaining that. She's going to have an evidentiary hearing there. She's entertaining a theory that because NARA called the FBI after some reluctance, because they didn't want to be in this contentious relationship mm-hmm. with Trump. They just wanted their documents back. And finally, they came to wit's end and they called the FBI. Because they called the FBI, Trump is arguing, they're part of the prosecution team. Because Mark Meadows and Pat Philbin, who remember was Trump's deputy White House counsel, because both of them involved the Biden White House in different ways. Trump wants to say that the Biden White House was involved. It's like, no, it's Mark Meadows that got them involved because he was trying to kind of, he was trying to get to one of the key sources in the White House. And at that point, the key source in the White House was like, we can't let you do this on your own. That's inappropriate for a bunch of reasons. So anyway, he's making ridiculous arguments. Aileen Cannon is entertaining them. She's rewriting CIPA, the Classified Information Procedures Act. So it's not going to happen before the election. It wasn't going to happen before the election anyway. This makes it far less likely that she'll block out Tanya Chutkan if Tanya Chutkan gets a chance to have a trial. But again, we expect the Supreme Court to delay on that decision until July. And there's only a few scenarios in which we could get to anything substantive. So that's not going to go forward. And then in Georgia, the appeals court granted Trump and everyone else an appeal of the Fannie Willis disqualification effort.
Amazing. So, did you expect that?
What's that?
Did you expect that? I mean, the appeals court this week said, yes, we'll hear an appeal to the ruling that said that Fannie Willis can remain on the case.
So the Georgia experts that I listened to weren't entirely expecting it, but they did point out that the key question about standards, the standard is not clear. And so that was, I think, their take is maybe the standard's going to end up lower than the way that the judge McAfee applied it. Maybe it's going to, end up higher, but because the standard is not set, they're going to get their appeal and they'll have an opportunity to bring in other kinds of issues.
So again, my statement at the beginning, it looks like this is the only one of the Trump four different criminal prosecutions that will go to trial before the election.
And meanwhile, he got busted, or not got busted, he should be busted. He was eliciting bribes from the oil and gas executives.
Oh my God.
He said to them, do you know that?
Yes, $1 billion. You raise me $1 billion and I'll lower your taxes and I'll do away with all the environmental protections that the Biden administration put in effect during his term. Is that basically
it? So, yeah, that's basically it. So the question is, what happens to that? Meanwhile, there's a Washington Post article today describing that Paul Manafort is working for free again. And he, in between, was consulting with companies that wanted to do business in China. So this time he's going to be an unregistered agent of China. It's just a mess. It's just it's a colossal mess. And
I think the technical term is clusterfuck.
Yeah, it's been a hard week.
That's an understatement.
Stormy Daniels was great, but it's been a hard week.
Right. And the thing is, and you've said it, I think it's time to reinforce, the courts are not going to save us here. No hero is going to come save us. There is no magic button that Jack Smith can push to get Aileen Cannon removed from the Florida case. Now, there's something about, and I screwed up the name the other day, the mandamus. Something that he could take to the 11th Circuit Court to get her removed, but it's not quite that simple, and it's not going
to
happen.
It's not that simple, and it's highly unlikely to work. And it's not even clear that Jack Smith would try it because, just as an example, Hunter Biden tried it in Delaware, and that failed.
Right.
And the judges don't like when you try and mandamus them, and he tried in both Delaware and California. We're still waiting to see what happens in California. It has a slightly better chance in California, but still a really, really slim chance. And so now he's pissed up all these judges, and the judge issued a bunch of rulings yesterday where she's like, okay, you're going to have 1 week notice on what's called 404B, so other incriminating information, where I expect them to bring in photos of drug use in LA. There's another picture of him with a gun, parts of that everything is working out. And I said that it would. Everything is working out as horribly as it could for Hunter Biden as possible, literally.
And when you think about it, he was right there. They had a plea deal in place. He paid his back taxes. He rectified what he could. They had a plea deal. And then at the very last minute, the rug was pulled out from under him, and it seems like now they're throwing everything at him.
Oh yeah, they're throwing everything at him. The prosecutors, well, they, you know, they're doing a bunch of stuff that is within the norm of prosecutors, but I call prosecutorial dickishness, because it's the kind of stuff that prosecutors can get away. You know, like every single special counsel investigation that I've seen, they've gone overboard to give expansive discovery. Not here. They're not. The most astounding ruling that the judge, Judge Noriega, made in Delaware is that prosecutors don't have to provide any kind of bait stamp telling Hunter Biden where they're getting stuff that comes in off the laptop, which is, among other things, it's going to really bog down the trial, because if I'm Hunter Biden, I'm going, you know, like, I mean, and people should know, like, the case against Hunter Biden in both these places is strong. It's just that in neither place would it, those cases normally be charged
on any other person.
And the prosecutor had decided he wasn't going to charge anything, and then he decided that he wanted to go chase the Alexander Smirnoff allegation, because he was gonna bust Joe Biden for bribery, and that's what killed the plea deal. That is what, I mean, the prosecutors reneged on the terms of the plea deal, and both judges in California and in Delaware jumped through hoops so that they didn't have to examine that part of it. In Delaware, I'm now convinced that she went into that hearing determined to kill the plea deal. And she did some stuff, like, that's, I think, where Hunter Biden should have tried to appeal, because she did stuff that is unconstitutional for her, I think, which she said herself is unconstitutional. So, you know, the cases against him are fairly strong. So I expect that he's fucked. I think he's royally fucked.
Oh my.
And he can't appeal. Like, I think he's got a really good chance on a lot of these appeals, but he can't appeal until after he's gone to trial.
Sure, and because he needs something to appeal, right. But he can't even appeal. So tell us a little bit about this judge, Mary Ellen Noriega. Is she a Trump appointee? What do we know about her?
She's a Trump appointee. Both of these judges have a past in patent law or IP law. Both are Trump appointees.
Of course.
And I when I first reviewed the transcript of that plea hearing, I was like, she seemed to be interested in protecting his rights. But when I went back and read her opinion rejecting his motions to dismiss, first of all, she rewrote her own transcript. She basically said, she didn't rewrite, but she's like, here's what I say happened in that hearing. And I was like, well, that's funny, because here in the hearing, you said that Chris Clark had modified the terms of the immunity. That means that you recognize the immunity as being in place. And now you're saying that because it never came in writing, you're recognizing in real time that the contract had been modified doesn't count anymore. And that's garbage. Like, it's complete garbage. So she took that out. But the other thing is, I would be shocked if Judge Noriega was not subject to the same kind of treatment that everybody else in a Trump-related case is. In other words, like, I would be shocked if Judge Noriega did not have the same worries for her family that were in the background when David Weiss decided to renege on a signed plea deal. And so, you know, was she persuaded by Republicans? I mean, she made a decision very early on that she was going to post grand jury materials, which should have been an opportunity if she was really looking out for Hunter Biden's interests. She should have said, no grand jury material. I'm the judge overseeing this grand jury investigation. No, you can't have the grand jury material. And she posted it. So, I think it's likely she was persuaded by Republicans. Her motion to dismiss order, again, shifts the question and said there's no evidence that Republicans intervene. And it's like, they intervene in your own docket. What are you talking
right.
about? Like, your docket is proof that they intervene. So I now a lot more, you know, like, I don't know whether she's become impatient with Hunter Biden or whether she just always had it in for him. But and the judge in Los Angeles always had it in for Hunter Biden. So, you know, he's facing hostile judges, and he is facing prosecutors who not only do not adhere to the low standards that John Durham adhered to, who clearly are not adhering to the standards that Robert Mueller and Jack Smith have adhered to. So, like, Jack Smith, first thing he did after charging Donald Trump was give him all the grand jury materials. Here in the Hunter Biden case, he's not getting any grand jury material until a week, 10 days before trial, which is incredibly late. Like, you know, you know, I can point to things that everyone involved, like one of the things the judge did, she said, oh, in your memoir, you describe after the fact telling your sister-in-law, telling other people about having been caught with a gun. That's not in the memoir. Where it is a New York Post story that only exists thanks to Rudy Giuliani. So she made a claim that something that she knows from the New York Post is actually in the memoir, and then said there's no evidence Rudy Giuliani had any influence on this case.
Oh my.
So it's stuff like that, that both judges have done, and not even sure whether they know that they've done it. The prosecutors in one point said, oh, you know, you don't need Joseph Ziegler. This is the IRS guy. You don't need Joseph Ziegler's focus on Hunter Biden and sex workers. Hunter Biden wrote about that himself in his memoir. It's like, no, he didn't. He wrote about his addiction in his memoir, but he wrote like that to the extent that sex workers show up, he said, I called a sex worker because that was my way to score a hit of, you know, of crack cocaine. So he actually doesn't talk about soliciting sex workers in the book. And the prosecutor just claimed it did, claimed, you know, he's made, that particular prosecutor has made three claims that are false and that at least David Weiss must know is false. And ethical prosecutors would correct the record if they made those errors. And they're not doing it in this case. They're just like, I'll just say anything and it doesn't really matter. You know?
Right. Well, this reminds me of with the Stormy Daniels testimony, that Necklace, the defense attorney, kept saying, well, you admitted, you know, you said things. And Stormy Daniels is like, well, show me where I said that. I didn't say that. And she caught her in a fabrication, in a lie, a number of times. And she's like, no, I'm not taking this shit. It sounds like that's what the prosecutors are doing with Hunter Biden.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just really, you can say, and I perfectly respect people who say Joe Biden's kid should be subject to gun laws, just like everyone else in America. Biden's kid should be subject to drug laws, just like everyone else in America. He has been a champion of both gun laws and drug laws. So Hunter Biden should not get any kind of deal. If that's how you feel about Hunter Biden, then great. Like, you know, you've got your prosecution and he is, you know, he stands a really good chance of being convicted. But you should ask for prosecutors to at least be, you know, especially as special counsels, right? Because as special counsels, they don't have the oversight that a normal U.S. attorney would have. They don't have, like, Hunter Biden's attorneys can't go to the part of DOJ that, you know, where you complain about ethical people, because those are the people that David Weiss is now reporting to on this. And those are the people, like, so they're implicated in it. And so it really, this is something, you know, this was a problem with Durham. This was a problem with Robert Herr. And David Weiss is really just exploiting it and pushing the limit. And, you know, when you put it on top of reneging on a plea deal, they're like, we'll get away with everything. And we are going to go ahead and treat this. And again, I mean, it's important people to know that this is how the criminal justice system works for most people.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying Hunter Biden should be treated specially. It's important for people to know that this kind of shit happens all the time and that the precedents do allow prosecutors to do this kind of stuff.
Wow.
So it's important to know that, you know, like a lot of people are like, oh, this really sucks. I'm like, it sucks for everyone who goes through the criminal justice system. I mean, no one gets treatment like Donald Trump. So it's important to remember that, but by the same token, he is being treated differently with a special counsel. I mean, beyond the fact that he's a private citizen being investigated with a special counsel because somebody tied to Russian spies framed his dad. I mean, that's really the reason why this went to special counsel. But I think that one of the reasons the prosecutors are being such assholes is because they know that. And they, you know, are sort of like, let's get this through to prosecution before something explodes, because, you know, I don't want to have to back off these allegations I made. I don't want to have to, like, I want my case.
Isn't all of this fodder for an appeal once they get through it? I mean, I'm looking at
it. It is. Yeah, no, I do. I think he'll have many grounds for appeal. And I think that there's a really good chance they'll be successful. The problem is the guy is a recovering addict.
Yep. Yeah.
The, you know, like, this is going to be even more, the judges are going to let in a lot more crap than Judge Merchan did.
Right. And you even point out that the Judge Noriega denied all of Hunter Biden's requests for discovery. How do you do that? I mean,
I mean, those are, most of those decisions are totally normal.
Oh, really?
Most of those decisions. Okay. Yeah. I mean, like he asked for, can I see grand jury materials? It would be appropriate for me to see grand jury materials in Delaware. I've seen Abby Lowell, his attorney, succeed in that kind of request, actually in the Tom Barak case. Here it didn't succeed, but it almost never succeeds. Okay. So I'm not surprised that it didn't succeed. You know, I've heard rumors about the way the courthouse works in Delaware that actually says he probably has reason to want the grand jury materials. But because there's at least one staffer there who really doesn't like Joe Biden. But most of those decisions are totally normal. The okay. decision about not forcing prosecutors to say where they get stuff from the laptop, not normal. That's crazy stuff. And then the decision to let prosecutors wait until right before trial to turn over certain kinds of information, churlish, but unsurprising coming from a judge who you've threatened to mandamus. In other words, like, that's the risk you get when you go as aggressive as Abby Lowell has, is you're going to piss off the judge, and the judge ultimately gets to make these evidentiary rulings. And so now you're climbing uphill at trial because you pissed off the judge. That's normal.
Okay. And this trial is now set to begin on June 3rd?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. June 3rd.
And his other trial is set to begin at the end of June. And
that amazing.
The second. Yeah.
So there will be two Hunter Biden trials, but we're not going to see another Donald Trump trial.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's just amazing. Yeah. And they're screaming about the two, you know, criminal justice system as if Donald Trump is being treated poorly. He's Teflon. He's getting away. I mean, this is what I'm hearing from everybody, it seems. It's like he's getting away with murder. And again, it's up to us because the courts are not going to save us.
Yeah, one of the things I focused on, people who read my site will know this week, was pushing back about, first of all, describing the disinformation that is helping Trump to succeed. Describing, you know, like I wrote when the Eileen Cannon ruling came down, I QT'd Kyle Chaney, who he was one of the first people to announce it. I QT'd it and I said, you know, Eileen Cannon bowed to Donald Trump, and doesn't want accountability for stealing nuclear documents.
Yep.
That is, in fact, what Donald Trump on one charge 19, is accused of stealing a nuclear document and storing it in his ballroom and refusing to give it back. So it was an accurate post, but it was turned into fodder for the kinds of swarming that happens on social media, and that, as I pointed out, that Elon Musk, because he has given me a check mark, has made it so everything I write is susceptible to that kind of swarming. And I'm not complaining about that, but I'm just saying this is how, and it got a ton of visibility. And one reason I think that the right wingers swarmed it is because they're like, the 200,000 people are going to see this. And we, you know, they really are working hard to have it stated as plainly as that. This is about stealing nuclear documents. Because they don't want that nitty gritty out there. Then I wrote a post about this right wing propagandist named Julie Kelly, who
tell us about Julie Kelly, because they're all out there. Why are you singling her out? Because it boosts her, doesn't it, in a sense?
I'm singling her out because she's a dumbass. And I'm singling her out because she actually plays a really core place in the right wing propaganda sphere, because she is covering all these legal cases. I first started, I mean, I knew her, I think, from the Durham investigation first, but she turned food blogger to legal blogger Especially when she was trying to trying to claim that the Jan Sixers were peaceful protesters. And very, you know, in 2021, I walked her through all of the people who were incarcerated. And I said, they're not all, but they are mostly accused of assaulting cops.
Right.
So you are lying about the number of people charged with assaulting cops, and you are lying about the degree to which people who are incarcerated are there because they assaulted cops, you know? And so, I think other legal reporters are a little more tolerant of her, but I'm like, no, I very patiently walked you through every single one of those defendants. You ultimately conceded that there were something like 112 who were charged with assault, and you continued to lie about it. And so in this case, she did a post in the last week where, it turns out the FBI, who are dumbasses, fucked up both investigations into POTUS's, former POTUS, because in both cases, they got the documents in boxes out of order.
Okay.
There are a couple of the 13 or so that were seized from Mar-a-Lago where that's true of, and the prosecutor in that case is like, well, you know, some of this stuff is like cocktail napkins and you can't really keep them. Like there's a picture I put in the post or I put online where it's just a box, you know, like it's a half full box. And these documents didn't start as file folders. It was just Trump throwing shit in boxes.
Right.
And so they've shifted, you know? And so Stan Woodward, who is really good at this kind of stuff, is like, oh, you know, we think that you have to be able to tell us the order of the boxes. I'm like, it doesn't matter for your client anyway, because he's not charged with anything having to do with the classified documents. He's charged with boxes, and the boxes have remained integral. Like the numbers of classified documents have remained the same. He happens to be complaining about the box with the highest number of classified documents, but many of them are confidential. All, you know, nothing's top secret. And so Julie said, oh, they brought in placeholders, which, by the way, has been known since August of 2022 or September of 2022. They brought in placeholders. And that's proof that the cover sheets in that photo from Mar-a-Lago, they added those cover sheets. I'm like, wow, you're a dumbass, Julie. Why would they do that for five top secret documents and not the other two top secret documents in the box? Right. And she stated as fact that there were no cover sheets in that box. And I'm like, not only were there cover sheets in that box, but there were also 43 empty envelopes.
Right.
And we don't see the 43 empty envelopes, which should be especially damning. So she's got all the snot-nosed right-wingers believing that picture, like that, this is what they've been trying to prove from day one, that it was framed. Now, Trump is not actually claiming anything about the substance of that. Like, Trump is talking about those documents in particularity. So he's not claiming those documents weren't there anymore. That's an old lie that he tried. But Julie is telling that lie, and it went super viral. She went on Steve Bannon's show. She went on Don Jr.'s show. And the point I'm trying to make is not that, I mean, Julie is a dumbass and she lies all the time, but there's very little pushback. I mean, I made the effort this time around because what she does is give Aileen Cannon cover. Aileen mm-hmm. Cannon believes this shit. Bill Barr believes this shit.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court believes this shit. And so because the right wing is very good at creating an alternate reality, which is easily debunked once you look at the documents, once you look at the actual facts, but because the right wing has so successfully created this alternate reality, people in positions of authority, like, do I know that Aileen Cannon doesn't care about the actual facts? I don't know. She was always sloppy with like the actual lawyering side. So maybe she's just sloppy with lawyering and she believes this stuff. Do I know that Bill Barr, you know, made it safe for Rudy Giuliani to solicit dirt from Russian spies? Maybe, but you can also, I'm writing about Bill Barr all week, but you can also see how it's possible that Bill Barr sort of pickled himself in Fox News and came to believe bullshit and then started chasing the bullshit. And that made him super susceptible to Russian disinformation. And so you have the attorney general who framed Joe Biden super susceptible to Russian disinformation because he believed what he saw on Fox News.
Yeah.
Do I think that Clarence Thomas believes what he sees on Fox News? Yeah, because you know who he's married to? She definitely believes what she sees on Fox News. So he sees her all the time. It's this is one of the things I'm trying to say is like, we're not going to get the trials we want, but one of the reasons why we're not getting the trials we want is because this alternate reality that Trump has created is so domineering on the right. And until we deal with that, until we start poking at that, until we start making Joe Kahn, the editor of the New York Times, understand that he has started internalizing Fox News bullshit, then, you know, we're always going to be swimming upstream. Like, Joe Biden has made incredible strides on certain, like his effort to blame Trump for eliminating choice is working. There are things like we're beginning to see the polls turn around. We're beginning to see Joe Biden begin to gain and close any gap with Donald Trump. But you're still dealing with the fact that 40% of the country believes whatever Trump turns the reality into. And Mike Johnson and Mike Lee and a bunch of other insurrectionists have started the next big lie. They're trying to say, you know, we need to pass laws so that immigrants can't vote. There's already laws, so yes, immigrants can't vote. But what they're doing is they're creating the excuse that will be used on election night to explain what happens when Joe Biden wins.
Oh, this is what I call opposite world. I've used this term for years now, but it's never been more in your face. It's
no longer mattered.
Wait, here it is.
The thing you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
And what Trump, I mean, this is how fascism happens.
That's like, right.
Fascism happens when everybody who wants to be part of a party, of the Republican Party in this case, everybody who wants to have any success in the Republican Party has to claim to believe, most of them don't believe it, but they have to publicly claim to believe that 2020 was stolen. They have to publicly claim to believe that Joe Biden isn't president. That is the price of admission for being a Republican right now. And you know, basically Trump has demanded from Republicans that they believe his bullshit lies.
Yes.
It's how you discipline the party. It's how, you know, everyone from top to bottom in that party. I mean, they got rid of a guy named Charlie Spies this week. Charlie Spies is one of, you know, Republicans always say that they want their own Mark Elias.
Yeah.
Because Mark Elias is the most effective person in the Democratic Party, right? He always wins these legal cases against Republicans and they whine. And, you know, Steve Bannon will tell you 100 times that he wants a Republican Mark Elias. Well, Charlie Spies is the closest thing that the Republicans have. He's very good at his job at doing the kinds of things that Mark Elias does. And he has been party to big lie kind of lawsuits. But he wasn't a huge Trump supporter, and he was vocal at certain times about the fact that the big lie was a big lie. He'd still go to court for it, but, you know, he would say, you know, and so he was at the RNC and they ousted him. You know, so they got rid of their best lawyer because he has at times told the truth.
Right. You know, and to further to the point of this, FreedomWorks is now gone. FreedomWorks has disbanded. It's been replaced by MAGA. The Florida delegation to the Republican convention has been announced. Barron Trump is a delegate. And along with him are Tiffany Trump, Donald Jr., Eric Trump, Kimberly Gargoyle, and Tiffany's husband. They're all delegates from Florida to the convention. This is, you know, talk about a banana republic. I mean, this is this. But
you know, I'm less bothered by that. What did you just say before that, though? That was the one I wanted to come back to.
I'm drawing a blank because I was going to go into your piece that you wrote on Monday. 400 rich people pay $40,000 to hear Trump glorify cop assailants, which is true. But even further than that is the what you mentioned earlier, the New York Times, and to a lesser extent, but still to an extent, the Washington Post, using his vernacular, equating the Gestapo, Biden with the Gestapo.
Right. Both of them put as headlights, you know, Trump says Biden is Gestapo. And it's like, there are 100 things you can put in your headline. And you did precisely the one Donald Trump has trained you to put up there. Yeah. Because if somebody is just reading the headlines of the New York Times, they'll see Biden equals Gestapo.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, and this was the point I wrote, there were 400 people in that thing, and they each gave $40,000. Yeah. And all of those people, every single one of them, sat there as Trump celebrated a bunch of men who attacked cops. And that should be the takeaway. Like, yes. Here, you know, like, let's name all of them. And we can, once we get the FEC filings, we will be able to, and then we can go to them and say, hey, you run this company that is in my community. Why are you paying to glorify people who assault cops? I mean, that's where we need to be. And stupid New York Times and Washington Post are like, oh, Biden equals Gestapo. And it's like, no, that's not doing it, folks. Going back to like Barron Trump, you know, yes. if I were Melania, I'd be actually not all that thrilled about him becoming a delegate, because this is where the climbing happens. And I also think that we still don't know how much fallout there will be at the state levels in Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, and Nevada, just the top two, but Arizona, Michigan, and Georgia. These people who are normally the people who get the delegate slots are all got charged with crimes, right? Yeah, and right. So, you know, now Melania's son is going to be in the position where he'll get charged with a crime. But it also means there are people who've worked for years to have a certain kind of influence in Florida, and they've all lost their place,
right?
For Donald Trump's children,
and, right?
And you know, there are people who get really pissed off about that. There are people like they literally work and work and work, and you know, Barron Trump for doing nothing gets their slot, and so it is to be seen how that, you know, like Nikki Haley still got 20% in Indiana.
Yes, 21% in Indiana.
Yeah, you know, like there are reasons for Trump to be concerned. We don't know how it's going to play. All I was trying to say with the propaganda is let's be cognizant of what we're doing to counter the propaganda, because I've been saying this from day one, when, you know, every time you complain about Merrick Garland rather than Bill Barr, or rather than Donald Trump, or rather than Donald Trump, you know, you are A, attacking your own, B, engaging your own kind of conspiracy theorizing, because virtually everything that people say about Merrick Garland, except if it pertains to special counsels, in which case I totally agree with him there, is not true, right? You're angry and scared, so you need an explanation. The easy explanation is blame Merrick Garland rather than blame Donald Trump. And because we're not blaming Donald Trump, we haven't been doing the work to counter these conspiracy theories. We haven't been, you know, we've been watching as the entire Republican Party gives in to the big lie, when in January 2021, they didn't. And it wasn't going to be a trial per se that changes that. It was going to be real pushback on you know, making those billionaires or millionaires who paid $40,000 to listen to Trump applaud attacking cops. They need to be held accountable for the fact that they are willing to buy into that.
Right.
Because Donald Trump is not going to be held accountable. They're, you know, he's not in your community. He's beyond your reach. We need to start holding the people who are in our communities accountable. By the way, I just before I got on, I used to share a green room with Pete Hoekstra, who is now the chair of the Republican Party in Michigan, because they had to get rid of all of the QAnoners because they were crazy and half were arrested. But in one day when we were in the green room, when he was about to be appointed ambassador to the Netherlands, we were talking about the process, and he admitted to me that when he started getting going through the vetting process to be ambassador, first of all, he had no clearance. A lot of people believe that members of Congress have clearance. He had been the key player in the House Intelligence Committee for years. He had never had clearance, but he admitted to me, and he's a right winger, and he's, you know, one of those paper please guys, is he admitted to me that, so this would have been like 2018, 2019. He admitted to me that he had no papers. He had no proof of naturalization. He immigrated to the United States with his parents.
Wow.
As a lot of Dutch reform Michiganders do. Like, there's a lot of Dutch immigrants, first generation immigrants in Michigan. And so he, when he needed to get clearance and needed to prove that he could be, you know, keep the nation secrets, he had no proof of citizenship. And so I was just badgering him on Twitter. I was like, you know, don't you think that this move to pass a law to make it harder for immigrants to vote, aren't you worried about, because one of the, you know, on top of Muslims, one of the biggest immigrant communities in Michigan is Dutch Reform. So uh-huh. Don't you feel like this discriminates against Dutch people? And do you think people like you should have a harder time to vote? So I didn't get a response to that, I saw, but I was having a bit of fun with him because he follows me. So
good. Well, keep
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, I used to share a green room.
The other thing that I mentioned that that slipped my mind for a moment was FreedomWorks. So this is in the news now. FreedomWorks is closing,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, FreedomWorks, back when I did surveillance work, they were very good allies. They were very good allies about two subjects, about surveillance and about criminal justice reform. They cared about it. They were very principled about it. They were very reliable allies. There were a couple of guys who worked for FreedomWorks that I, you know, would hug on site because
really?
I had a very good relationship with them. I mean, in the same way that I had a good, very good relationship with Justin Amash, who
right.
is my congressman, right? And they canceled with almost no money. They're like, okay, we're shutting down because there is no libertarian side to the Republican Party anymore. And I, you know, that's sad because Freedom, as loathsome as they are on all financial issues, they are principled and they were people that you could do business with in the same way that Cato Institute is. Same issues that they're good on. And now you've lost a little corner of the Republican Party that did adhere to principles and that you could find a common cause with. And now, you know, it's literally fascism taking over the Republican Party. And it's sad for people who are principled on the right to find out that there is no more support for that in the Republican Party.
None at all. And then you look at, so I'm going to go back to the trial again. So Trump's family has famously not shown up, has not been there with him. I think Eric has been there. But I guess it was yesterday or the day before, Rick Scott, Voldemort, the senator from Florida, is there doing Trump's bidding and saying, attacking the judge's daughter and doing all the things that Trump is gagged from doing and saying he needs to be able to attack the judge's daughter. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Rick Scott, and
I think he's probably auditioning for, you know, because like Trump is basically having a quiet reality TV show to audition VP candidates. Do I think Marco Rubio has a chance in hell? Absolutely
no.
not.
No.
No. But, you know, Trump is going to love using Marco Rubio and string him along until he gets certain things from Marco Rubio. And it's a great power play for him. And so, you know, that's sort of what I think Rick Scott was doing. But that's that's another example. One of the things that I repeat a lot, and I think everyone should repeat a lot, is we are all going to be Don Bacon's wife.
Yes.
Don Bacon, remember, is to the extent that there are moderate Republicans. Yep. He's one of the most moderate. He's from a swing district in Nebraska. And he, when Jim Jordan was up to be speaker, he opposed Jim Jordan. He was one of the people who came out against Jim Jordan. And he got the same treatment that Hunter Biden and the judges in that case and the prosecutor and the judges who have presided, including Aileen Cannon, by the way, who have presided over Trump cases, including Jack Smith, including Merchant. All of these people get this mob treatment. You know, we talked about Lisa Page a few weeks ago, how she's still getting stalkers who are Trumpsters. And this is the point where I think, you know, we need to be, which is to say, do you support mob justice? Do you support your wife? Because at the time that Don Bacon was being stalked, his wife, who of course was back in Nebraska by herself, was sleeping with a gun under her pillow. That's where they were at. And so the question you need to ask Republicans that you have in common, do you want to be Don Bacon's wife? There is nothing that can protect you at some point from that kind of mob justice. So do you want a world where everyone is just you know, two steps away from being Don Bacon's wife? And the answer normally is no, but you need people to think it through that they themselves will one day be Don Bacon's wife.
Right. You know, and back to your now viral tweet in response to Eileen Cannon's ruling, an indefinite postponement of a court date in the Florida's top secret documents case. Mob-like responses to your tweet, that they come out of the woodworks. And as you said, because now you have that mandated Elon blue check that is invisible.
I mean, but, you know, like people have done that with me for a long time. I'm actually, I think, I'm an asshole on Twitter, and I freely admit it. But I'm an asshole on Twitter because I actually do this. People aren't going to believe me, but I do think fairly tactically about how I do these things. I mean, you know, like, am I going to screen cap this person, or am I going to respond and make them go viral? And I do things like that intentionally. And generally, it has prevented me from being treated, with the exception of like Glenn Greenwald. I mean, Glenn Greenwald and his lads went after me for years.
Yeah.
But I always, always push back and still push back against Maddie Dick Pics, right?
Yes.
And I, you know, so generally I am not treated in the way that most women in those situations are. And that is one reason I'm an asshole on Twitter. And that is one reason why I make these tactical decisions, because they, when they try the mob, you know, I push back. You know, I've got this running tweet relationship with this guy named Will Shipley, Bill Shipley, who's a lawyer, not a terrible lawyer. He's a lawyer for a lot of the Jan Sixers, and I'm grateful that he's there because he's less shitty than a lot of the people who are grifting off these guys. Mm-hmm. But he's also like a complete right wing nut job, and it infuriates him that I am right a lot when I do legal commentary. I was right far more than he was on Durham, and it still infuriates him. So he comes out, waggles at me, you know, and he's an old man and apparently not physically fit. And I'm like, oh, waggle man, you know, old Mr. Waggle man is out after me, and I make fun of him, and he tries to counter mob me. And, you know, this is Julie does the same thing. I just kept going after Julie because it's important that people who follow Julie know that she's being called out for lying. It's important that they at least see that there is a case that she is lying to them, because she is, and she's making a lot of money, and she's, you know, she got CPAC. Now she's always on Bannon's show. She's a very effective liar. And we need those people to be identified as liars.
Yes. And it speaks to the reason that it's a good thing that you're still on Twitter, shitter. I am too. I don't have the influence you do, but it's good that some of us remain on that horrible platform, because we need to push back against their narrative.
Yeah, I have to keep changing my screen name. And so I'm trying to do running puns of Czech. Like I did earlier in the week, I did Nini Chiska, which it says, I'm not Czech, right? I'm not Czech. And that lasted because it takes Twitter like a day or so to make sure that you're still you. So I, you know, it's now this game.
So you keep doing it to get rid of the mandated blue check that Elmo gave you?
It still functions. I'm still treated as a blue check, but I, you know, I'm pushing back however little ways I can against Elon Musk. Whose businesses are all having real problems.
Yeah,
so
they
maybe
are.
Even, you know, it's crazy time.
All right, we've got a few minutes left. So in the few
Steve
minutes
Bannon. We've Speaking of Steve
Oh,
Bannon.
Steve Bannon. Okay.
Steve Bannon finally, the D.C. Circuit finally rejected his appeal on contempt. So interesting timing. Judge Merchant is presiding over his fraud trial, right? So after he was pardoned, New York State charged him for the same fraud that all his federal co-defendants have since been incarcerated
yes.
for. So that trial was supposed to start basically yesterday, and Judge Merchant delayed it until September. So he's going to be in trial, Steve Bannon, unless it gets delayed again. But so the D.C. Circuit finally rejected his appeal of his contempt verdict, guilty verdict, and four-month sentence. He's going to have the ability to stall for another, I don't know, probably 2 months. Because he's going to be able to say, I want an appeal here and an appeal here. And the way in which the D.C. Circuit did it is, you know, it only goes into effect after everyone rejects his appeals. But so he may be in prison in time for his trial in the fall.
Wow.
So, yeah,
that'd be cool. Wouldn't it be nice to see him let into the courtroom in his orange jumpsuit? Although they let them wear a suit, I guess, when they go to court.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, the Democrats are not faultless. We found out more about Henry Cuellar's indictments and his wife, Imelda. Her name is Imelda. and
isn't that great?
Their adult son.
Awesome.
Yes. So now his adult son apparently is like knee deep in this. And if not for him, that this might not have even been indicted.
Yeah, there's going to be some shoe drop. Is it definitely a son? I haven't seen.
Oh, adult child. I don't know.
It's an adult child. I think it's a son, but I need to confirm that. But the adult child was always getting a 20% cut of the fraudulent contracts. And then everything sort of went into a pause in 2020. And then in 2021, the adult son was put in charge, particularly the Mexican stuff, and or the adult child. Again, I'm not sure
right,
it's a son. But, and so if you look at the indictment, it's not clear how some of the charges aren't already expired, the statutes of limitation, unless you put the adult child in the middle of it, because the adult child continues the conspiracy in 2021. What did happen is that, and I predicted this, I was like, oh, look, there are two sealed dockets that are associated with this. So who are the likely candidates in this indictment? And I named three, one being the adult child. It's not that person. It's one is this associate in San Antonio who was quoted at length in the indictment. I'm like, that guy clearly is cooperating because, you know, you can't source that information from anywhere else. So so those two people, Cuellar's former chief of staff and this dude in San Antonio, they both cooperate. They both entered plea agreements in March. So they've got high level witnesses on the Mexican side of the scam. And DOJ immediately filed for SEPA in that case, meaning they've got a lot of classified information they have to deal with, which, you know, like there's a reference in the indictment to a conversation between Azerbaijanis back in 2013 about recruiting Cuellar. And that's obviously from an intercept of some sort on these Azerbaijanis. It's also incredibly dated. So there's probably likely more recent intercepts on these Azerbaijanis that DOJ will have to either say can come in or would be substituted. So that's the Cuellar case. I mean, I would find it, like I have said, I think the Cuellar case is far more straightforward than the Menendez case, which goes to trial, I think, next week or in the next couple of weeks. The Menendez case, they have him dead to rights for a few things, and they have a cooperating witness on the fact that he tried to influence hiring decisions on legal cases. But DOJ's theory of what the gold bars were for has evolved over the course of this. And so whereas in Cuellar's case, you got contracts,
right?
And you got him involved in the contracts. Whereas I think Menendez is going to argue that his wife was really the one managing the Egyptian relationship. And so he's going to play dumb about much of the Egyptian relationship. So those both are going forward and they'll be interesting.
Now, do you know if the Menendez case is going to be televised?
No, it's a federal case.
Federal case. Okay, good. And I say good only because, you know, I worry that if it is televised, it's going to get a ridiculous, people need to know what's going on, but an unproportional bit of attention as opposed to like the Trump case that's not being televised that a lot of people just aren't even aware is happening.
Yeah, I doubt that the Menendez will get that much attention just because the way in which people do staffing for New York trials. I mean, like everyone sent people up to cover the Trump trial. That's super expensive. Like the media and Hunter Biden's the only other person that gets that kind of treatment. Like Fox sent 10 people to cover his arraignment and none of them knew anything about what was going on. And obviously New York City is incredibly expensive. I expect the same people who've been covering that case will continue to cover it. And like NBC in particular and New York Times have both done super, super good coverage of it. And so that's who I expect to do most of the coverage.
All right. Well, to be continued. Certainly never a dull moment these days. And you know, the old adage, may you live in interesting times. I could do with some boring downtime for now, but I guess that's not in the cards. Anyway, Marcy Wheeler, again, find her at emptywheel.net. Should be appointment reading every morning. And here, of course, every Friday. Please support her work because she does it without a paywall. And, you know, we need to support those of us who do that kind of work. And she does it better than anyone else. Marcy Wheeler, thank you. I will talk to you next week. Next Friday, right. Same time, same place. All right.
Yep. Take care.
You too. Bye. Peace out.